For doing Pirkei Avot, we're up to the 12th Mishnah in the second chapter, and we were learning quotes from the disciples of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Each one was giving three instructions for life. Rabbi Yossi Omer, so Rabbi Yossi says, we'll read the Mishnah simply and then learn the commentary. Your friend's money should be cherished by you as you cherish your own. And prepare yourself to learn Torah, she'ina yirushalach, because it doesn't come as an inheritance. Torah is something you have to invest in. It doesn't come on its own. V'chol ma'asecha yu l'shem shamayim, and all of one's actions should be for the sake of heaven. So those are the three messages Rabbi Yossi used to teach. Cherish your friends as your own. Prepare yourself for learning Torah. It doesn't come on its own. And your actions should be for the sake of heaven. So explains Rabbeinu Yonah. Yimamon chavecha chavivanecha keshelach lekayem bo mitzvat be'alav. When we say cherish your friend's money as your own, the idea is if your friend has given you money that he's charged you with a responsibility, do his will just as you would with your own. You want your money to play itself out the way you would want, so ensure that his money plays itself out the way he wants. Very often we entrust someone with money, we tell him, do X, Y, or Z for me, and things can go awry. Now, the most extreme case is what the Talmud says, that someone sends his friend and says, here's a ring, engage Chava with this ring, and he goes there and he meets Chava, and he says, boy, Chava's a very nice person, and he asks Chava, will you marry me? Chava says, yeah, and he engages her. So here his friend sent him to engage for himself. Now, there was a story this last century where that happened. It was famous at the time. Today, no one knows about it. But there was a story in the days of the Ben Ish Chai, in the days of the Baba Sali, in the town of the Baba Sali. There was a story like that. Coming back to here. So Rabbi Yossi says, your friend's money should be as cherished as your own. If your friend has given you money and he's asked you to do something with it, and you've taken that responsibility, so make sure to treat it with the care you would your own. An example of that we find in Talmud, where after Shmuel's father passed away, it says that people were talking bad about him. They said he had money that he was responsible for the orphans. He was taking care of... He was the guardian of the money for the orphans. Now no one knew where it was. So it says that Shmuel went after him. Went after his father. And he said, Dad, where'd you put the money? So his father said, well, when you go to the door, so under the door, their doors used to have a hinge that the bottom of the door would go into a little cup. Meaning the way the doors worked was, at one end of the door would have a protrusion. It would have a little stick that goes into the top of the doorpost and into the bottom of the doorpost. And under that was a cup so that it wouldn't rub away at the floor. It would rub away at the cup. So under that cup, he told him, I hid the money. Or maybe in that case it was under the mill. One or the other. There are two cases in the Gemara. I don't remember which was where. He tells him, you'll see that there's a pack of money, and then under that, hidden is a second pack of money, and under that is a third pack of money. The top and bottom packs are mine, the middle pack is the orphans. So he says, Dad, why'd you do that? So he says, well, I figured if anyone can figure out my hiding place, they won't realize there are three packs. They'll only see the upper packs, so they'll steal my money. And I figured that if any of the money, in those days money was made of gold and silver, if any of the money gets damaged from the humidity of the earth, my money was on bottom beneath the orphan's money, so my money would get damaged. So I hid it in a way that any damage that could happen to the money would happen to mine and not the orphan's money. So that's what Shmuel's father did. That's this idea. When you have your friend's money, be careful with it as though it were your own. Matken atzmecha lilmod Torah, prepare yourself to learn Torah, explains Rabbeinu Yonah, hatken atzmecha b'midot tovot. How do you prepare for learning Torah? One has to prepare his personality. He has to have good traits. He So that way he can learn Torah and understand it correctly. V'tagel manat ha-chasidut. And through that a person grows in piety. K'damar, as the verse says, as the Mishnah says, v'lo amar etz chasid. One who is not learned cannot be pious. He can have good intentions, but he can end up doing the wrong things with those good intentions. Look at Yiftach. We're in the middle of learning in our class on prophets. We're learning about Jephthi, they call him in English. Yiftach? Jephthi? How do you pronounce Yiftach in English? No, that's Yafet, one of Noah's sons. Yiftach in English is? Okay, you guys know who I'm talking about. And anyways, right. So we learned the story in Navi. He had all the good intentions, but he ends up giving up his daughter's life in the name of Hashem. He makes the biggest mistake with the good intentions. So we have this rule. So come Sunday night. Even though this Sunday, I don't know if we have class. I take the blame. So that's this idea. Lo amaretz chasid. When one isn't learned, they cannot be pious. Even if they're dedicated and they do the best they can, they could be, in Hebrew they have a saying, full gas on neutral. I mean, you hit the gas, but your car isn't in drive, so you're not getting anywhere. And the same is true when a person is not learned, so then all their efforts can be in vain. It says when Rabbi Akiva started, he was very into Judaism, and he once came across a corpse, and he carried it throughout the desert for hours. He was carrying it to bring it to be buried. And when he came to his rabbis, they said, you know, the soul of the deceased really suffers when you move it. If you found a person lying dead, you found a skeleton out in the desert, you don't know who it is. No one else is going to know who it is. Bury it there on the spot. That's in the best interest of the deceased. Every step you took hurt the deceased. The body doesn't like to be moved after passing unnecessarily. We do what we have to, but not more than that. So here Rabbi Akiva worked hard carrying a skeleton out of the desert to bury it. And he works this so hard. And then he discovers, much to his charging, that as hard as he worked, he was working in the wrong direction. That's this idea. Lo amaretz chasid. When a person hasn't learned, then even though they have good intentions, they won't succeed in being pious. Yes.
When you bring people to be buried in this world, it's preferable to move them in long distances than.
Yeah, Talmud says that. Yes. וזהו שאמר שלמה עליו השלום. That's what King Solomon said in Proverbs. רמות לאוויל חוכמות, בשער לא יפתח פיו. רצה לומר, כי האוויל, החוכמה אליו רחוק וגבוה גבוה מי ימצאנו. When a person has bad traits, so then wisdom, the wisdom of Torah seems so distant to them. ובמקום שפוסקין את הדין ומדברים בחוכמה, יחסום פיו, כי לא ידע להשיב. So even though he might make attempts, but when he walks into a place where they're learning Torah, he will suddenly be silenced because he won't know anything. מחשב להרע לו בעל מזימות יקרו, שלא תאמר בשביל שאין דעת האוויל נכונה לא נתחכם, כי אין לו סברה לדעת החוכמה. Shlomo continues in the next pasuk and says, don't assume that a person hasn't succeeded in Torah because he's not smart. You'll see that he is smart. You can see that this person is so smart in all his planning and plotting, how he's going to cheat on his taxes, and how he's going to cheat on his partner, and how he's going to cheat on the shul. And you see this person is so smart in every other way. People call him the plotter. So you see he's very smart in other ways, but suddenly when it comes to Torah, he can't get it. Why? Because in order to get Torah, one has to perfect their traits first. The more one works on one's traits, the more one can understand Torah. And so a person doesn't, he isn't advancing in Torah because the Torah is problematic for him. The Torah contradicts what he'd like to do. I remember when we were in elementary school, we had good friends who always cheated on every test. And these guys were geniuses. they could figure out the greatest ways to cheat on a test. They would spend hours the day before configuring how they could have this mirror reflect to that mirror, how they could have everything under the sun in order to cheat on a test. So they were brilliant. And if only they'd invest a fraction of the time in learning, they would have succeeded without cheating. Okay, so they have the brain power. They're just choosing where to direct it. So that's what this Mishnah says. Prepare yourself for learning Torah. That means one has to prepare one's traits, and then one can succeed in Torah. There's another point in preparing oneself for Torah. And that is that a person who wants to succeed in Torah is going to have to forgo some of life's amenities. You cannot be in two places at once. There's a limit on time. There's a limit on the capacity we have to invest. There are only 36 hours in a day, and there's only so much you could accomplish. So what can you do? You have to figure out, what am I doing with my time? And you're not going to be able to do everything. And a person has to constantly make choices. That's what someone asked last week. Should one diminish one's pleasures in order to learn Torah? You have to. There's no way you can start and enjoy life. But if you want to advance in learning Torah, then there's only so much you can do in a day. And obviously, if you're investing here, you're not investing there. Kadesh in Motto Harbe, if you want to accomplish a lot of Torah, then there's going to be a price. Kmosha Shaninu, as the Mishnah later on is going to say, Kachi Daka Shel Torah. The path of Torah entails pat bamelach tochel. A person has to be prepared to eat regular bread with a little bit of salt, with a little bit of added flavor. Umayim bamsurat tishteh. Then he drinks water, and he drinks water in simple vessels. Valaretz tishan. Then he sleeps on the simple cots on the earth, like we have here at Machon Meir. V'chayei tzar tichyeh. And life in general is not the most pleasurable life. There is a certain amount of investment you have to make. You come to Machon Meir, you live in a little bit more cramped quarters. You live in rooms that have a little bit of a draft. It's not the most fantastic quarters that you might have elsewhere. But you know what? Uvatorah ta'amel. Then you can really work hard in Torah. People have a choice what they're going to think about in life. If one is focused on having all the pleasures of life, so then he's not going to really grow in wisdom. Kmo shamru, as our sages said, tzavaro shemen or poave. There's a saying, if his neck has oil, so then he's thick. Meaning if he has the time to smear oils, to invest in all these, beautifying himself, that's wonderful. But that's an indication he never invested the time in learning. You know, we have Chabad in here. This week was Yutet Kislev. So the Rebbe of Chabad is quoted that people would visit him after Yom Kippur, after Tisha B'Av, and sometimes he would go till 12 o'clock at night teaching Torah before he would break his fast. Because there are only so many hours in the day. And he was fully invested in Klal Yisrael. So he could go another half a day after the fast. I saw it with some of my teachers, where they'd be learning and teaching long after the fast was over, because their focus in life was not about food. So that wasn't the issue. The Mishnah warns, prepare yourself for Torah because it doesn't come on its own. It's not an inheritance. You can't attain Torah if you don't work hard at it. It's not like an inheritance. An inheritance is something you don't have to work hard on. You know, someone else has to die and you got it. There's nothing else that you have to do, right? All you have to do is be related. And even if a person can say, you know what my lineage is? My father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, I come from a long line of learned people. Don't think that because you come from a long line of learned people, it's going to come to you. It doesn't work that way. Bli amal, you think it'll come without work? V'chiprich tzadik etz chayim. People think, my father worked hard, so the fruit of that is that I will be the continuation of the tree of life. Ein hadavar ken, doesn't work that way. Where do we say Etz Chaim? It's a tree of life. L'machzikim ba, to those who grasp Torah. It's a tree of life if you take hold of it. Tomcheha, he who supports it is going to be happy. Your parents had wisdom. You don't inherit that wisdom. It doesn't go in the genes. You got to work at it. If you want the wisdom, so then you have to acquire it with your own hard work. If that's what you do, so you will be praised, life will be good for you. So that's the second piece of advice, and the final piece of advice we will learn Bezat Shem next week. We have to discuss whether we're meeting next week. But So next time we meet. So what we learned from Rav Yossi, I'll get to you in 1 second. What we learned from Rav Yossi was, number one, a person should cherish his friend's money like his own. And we had the story of Shmuel's father and the money of the orphans as an example of that. And then we discussed preparing oneself to learn Torah, because you have to prepare your traits. And without Torah, you can't grow in your traits. And without traits, you can't grow in Torah. And we discussed the story of Rabbi Akiva, who, and the story of Yiftach. And then we discussed that a person has to be willing to forgo some of life's pleasures if he wants to make the investment in learning Torah. That's the only way he'll grow in Torah. Rabbeinu Yonah, what we're learning here. We're learning Rabbeinu Yonah's commentary. We didn't get there yet. Right. The final thing he's going to say is your actions should be for the sake of heaven. Ken Amir.
So, you're talking about working to merit Torah. But what if the case of, which is Zebulun and Sachar, that it's, if I'm not mistaken, Zebulun would work, Sachar would study, and the merit of Sachar's studies would go to Zebulun. So, and like, go for Rambam and his brother, like, his brother used to, if I'm not mistaken, his brother used to provide and used to help him. So, can it work this way also? Like, I mean, if you're down to earth and you can support someone studying Torah, does that merit come to you part of it or not at all? Or how?
So, first of all, even the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, when they discuss this option, it's discussed as another option. Every Jew has the responsibility to try and grow in Torah. Even in Yisachar and Zevulun, Zevulun has an obligation to learn Torah. It's true that even that if Zevulun funds Yisachar's learning, then he has a portion in that merit if they set it up that way. And it's true that that's another way in which one can get the merit of Torah. But one is not absolved from one's obligation. You have to grow in Torah, I have to grow in Torah, we all have to learn Torah. And even Zebulun has to learn Torah. And when you have a person who cannot grow in Torah in any other way, sometimes a person has all kinds of expenses. Sometimes they have to fund their parents, and sometimes they have to fund their children. And they have to invest a lot of time in making money. There's no middle ground. There's no way to make, you know, exactly what they need. They have to run a thriving business. So then we say, if you have to do that, so then you should know that you can get some merits of learning Torah by funding other people who learn Torah, Yisachar Zevulun. But it's not as an alternative. It's an additive, and it's a worst-case scenario, not ideal scenario. If you can do it, do it. But it's the ideal is you learning Torah. Yeah.
You, now, just to elaborate, because I want to be clear on that, when you're talking about growing in Torah, in this case, you're talking about becoming Torah, growing yourself. That you can't do by just funding someone. What you can do is you get the mitzvah of enabling him to do that, which is a big thing.
Agree. Yeah.
It's a very different thing than growing in Torah.
Yeah. I would add another point, which there's a famous story that there was a Rosh Yeshiva with his fundraiser, and I think it was the Rosh Yeshiva of Mir, and I think they both came to the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim lived not far from Mir. The city of Mir is not far from Radin. So the story goes that when they met with the Chafetz Chaim, so the Chafetz Chaim said to them, you know, you both share a portion in the world to come, because the Rosh Yeshiva could only teach and promote his yeshiva because of the funding of the fundraiser. So you're partners, and you'll be partners in the world to come. So the fundraiser heard this, and he looked at the Rosh Yeshiva, and he had this huge smile on his face. And he says, can you imagine, we're coming to the world to come, we're going to sit, I'm going to get to sit right next to you. And he's gloating. So the Rosh Yeshiva says, you know what, I hear you, but I still feel bad for you. So the fundraiser goes, why, Rabbi? He says, because I get this world also. I get my Olam Hazeh also. You're only going to get in the world to come. So there's an aspect, like Mr. Fleisch was saying, that there are benefits of learning Torah that you can't get by funding someone else. What the Rosh Yeshiva called Olam Hazeh, what Mr. Fleisch called becoming the Torah. Yeah, those are things which you're not going to get by funding someone else. And what?
Happy El is fine, but thank you. And in some ways, like you're saying, this you get more by learning. But if you're really in that position, as you said, where you have the opportunity, you're a Zuckerberg or somebody who has that much money, and you enable so many people to actualize themselves. You support Jim McCormick. While it's no excuse, it's also a great thing.
For sure, yes. Yeah. Yes.